Welcome back to By George. Next segment up, A10 Hierarchy. Featuring Petey Buckets. Follow him on Twitter at Petey Buckets. Petey, kick it off for us. Who's the 14th best team in the A10?
Oh, we're going bottom from top today, are we?
Bottom to the top.
All right. So these rankings were submitted last night before today's games. And as of last night, I actually had Richmond as the worst team in the A10. They beat what's supposed to be a pretty good UAB team today, so this will change next week. But through their first two games, they were one of the absolute worst defensive teams in the country. They had 126 D rating. I think it was actually a little bit worse than that. Offensively, they were scoring 92.5 points per 100 possessions. They didn't just get murdered in their first two games. They got murdered by two pretty bad teams, Delaware and Jacksonville State. So, yeah, I know they get Quan 4 back at some point. Delaware and Jacksonville State, who I think is just as worthy of that sort of, you know, incredulous emphasis as Delaware is.
And I saw this white guy, that's like white scruffy guy that I couldn't imagine playing basketball bald today.
Yeah, that's Grant Golden. He's I think he's going to be pretty good for him. I mean, he's going to have to be. But yeah, I think at least until today, they were too bad to rank any higher because those two season opening losses that they had were just horrible. So they were number 14 to start for me.
Number 13.
Lucky number 13 was Fordham. Their only win was against LIU Brooklyn. LIU Brooklyn was picked to finish sixth in the Northeastern Conference, which is not very good. They had a pretty horrible offensive rating of 84.8, worst in the A10 by far. They only scored 43 points when they played Florida State. And what's even worse for them is that their best player, Joseph Chartouni. Joseph Charcuterie.
Because Mason's going to eat him up.
That's correct. He looks like he might have regressed a little bit. He only had 5 points in the loss to Tulane. I think he's averaging around 4 steals a game.
That's right. When he got freshman of the year, I was so blown.
Yeah. So aside from the steals per game number, which is really gaudy because of Fordham's sort of insane trap and press scheme, his numbers are down across the board, and I think if you were banking on Fordham to exceed expectations, it was going to be because Chartouni took another step forward. And Charcuterie, sorry. And that's definitely not happened so far.
Number 12.
Duquesne has actually been the pleasant surprise of the A-10. They won pretty comfortably against St. Francis and VMI. Those two teams aren't very good, but, you know, compared to where I expected Duquesne to be at the beginning of the season, it was nice to see them win both those games by 10-plus points. The thing about Duquesne is that their out-of-conference schedule is really, really soft. I was looking through it, and I don't think there's a single team on there that you would say lets you know kind of who Duquesne is going to be. So we're really not going to know a whole lot about how good they actually are before A-10 play.
So this is like kind of like entering into your mind a fringe surprise in the A-10 or no?
No, I think it's probably more likely that they're going to be one of those teams with a pretty decent win-loss record before A-10 play starts, like 7-5 or something like that, and then they might get squished in A-10 play. So.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you can get the check. Yeah, thank you.
So, as you heard, we are at a bar in Shirlington recording A10 Hierarchy.
You can't edit this part out and make it feel less sad.
No. we're having a couple brews together.
Come on. Yeah.
And can we just get... Okay, so Duquesne bombed number 11.
Duquesne hasn't bombed. Duquesne, I think they lost today, but Duquesne's fine. I like Duquesne. Number 11, George Washington. Yuta Watanabe, he's their most important player. He's destructive defensively. He's got 8 rebounds, almost 3 blocks, and almost a steal per game. When you look at those sort of numbers, that just sort of instantly tells you that that's a guy who's changing the game on the defensive end. But offensively, he's just not super efficient at this point, and that's a little bit disappointing. I think he's got around 13 points on 12 shots. Their two wins are against some pretty bad teams, Hampton and Howard. and then they got murdered by Florida State. One other thing about them is that they're shooting about 20.
What was that Florida State game? Do you know?
Florida State was about 20 points, I think.
Yikes.
So 24 points. But one other thing I think is noteworthy about them is that they're only shooting 27% from three this year. That's really, really bad. They haven't been over 30% in a single game that they've played.
Yikes.
So they're going to need some better three-point shooting if they're going to compete at all in the A-10.
Number 10.
Number 10 is UMass. UMass has been a little bit of a surprise this season. The Luane Pipkins just put up 34 points on 18 shots against Niagara. I actually called him out as a volume scorer in our A-10 season preview because I think he averaged 10 points on about 10 shots per game. So this is a cool development. You know, in fairness, he was a freshman last year, so he's a sophomore this year. And UMass's only loss is to Harvard in overtime, and Harvard was the Ivy League favorite. They've got a 90.8 defensive rating, so they were really good defensively last year. They're still probably pretty good on defense this year, and they also got Rashawn Holloway back a little bit earlier than they were expecting. So this is a team. They got a new coach. This is a team that might surprise some people. I started them off at the season at number 12. They moved up to number 10. You know, keep it up. Maybe they continue moving up.
And what Pete's referencing is that we participate in some A-10 Talk stuff. You can follow them on Twitter at A-10 Talk. So right now we are participating in their power rankings. And so a couple different of us, you know, we got me and Chris and Pete all contributing to their power ranking system. And so when Pete references that, that's what he's talking about.
Right. Thank you.
What number are we on?
We're on number 9.
Number 9.
Lucky number 9 is LaSalle. LaSalle's interesting because they've been testing themselves in their out-of-conference schedule. They've already played Northwestern and BC. They have Miami and Temple coming up. The problem is that they didn't beat either Northwestern or BC. And I mean, I'll be honest, I don't think they're going to beat Miami or Temple either.
Temple looks good so far.
Temple looks pretty good, man.
They're coming back home with a nice little win.
Yeah. So BJ Johnson's doing it all for LaSalle right now. He's averaging 21-10 as of the time we're recording this podcast. Pookie Powell is a guy I shouted out as a guy who was someone to watch in the A-10 this year. He's been a little bit of a volume scorer. He's got about 13 points on 13 shots through his first few games. And then the rest of the guys on LaSalle, they're not scoring very efficiently either. So I haven't. This is one of those teams where I haven't seen him play yet, but just looking through the box scores, looking through the advanced stats, it looks a little bit like it's BJ Johnson, then it's Pookie Powell, and then you kind of wonder if there's anybody else on the team that you got to worry about.
Number 8.
So I've actually still got our beloved George Mason Patriots at number 8 right now. I know I just wrote
at 3-1.
At 3-1, and I just wrote a really drippy, fawning piece about how awesome these past two wins were.
And again, you can find that at giantkiller.co.
Thank you. Thank you for the plug. But yeah, so the competition has been weak, if we're keeping it real. Cal State, Northridge, Binghamton, Lafayette, the three wins are not... those are not what anybody's going to call good wins at the end of the year.
Meanwhile, one's in overtime and one's like a two-point bucket.
One was a two-point game that came down to the wire, and the Binghamton game, even though we won that by 12, we were trailing at the half.
Right.
So
number 8 probably makes some sense.
Yeah.
Although I don't have them at 8 in my personal power rankings, but, you know, this is the Petey Bucket segment.
They're number 1 in my heart. But number 8 in the power rankings.
Number 7
is Dayton. Dayton, I think, might be the biggest faller. They, you know, I think they're kind of underperforming their talent to an extent so far. So Daryl Davis, I don't know how he pronounces his name, has emerged as the top scorer. He's scoring over 20 points a game. Zerius Williams, who's sort of a stretch four, he's like 6'8", 220, he can hit threes. He's settled into more of a fill-up-the-box score kind of role, which obviously could change. But through their first few games, he's averaging, I think, 10 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 1 steal, not quite 1 block. But, you know, he's the kind of guy who's doing a little bit of everything. And then you've got Josh Cunningham, who's averaging 15-9. And you put that all together, and they've won a nail biter against Ball State. Then they lost to Hofstra, and then they beat Ohio. So they're 2-1. The two wins are not great wins. The loss is not a very good loss. You know, they look a little bit underwhelming so far.
Number six.
So number six is St. Louis. St. Louis is probably one of the risers from where I had teams in the preseason. One thing that their early games have demonstrated is that the talent is legitimate. Javon Best is their Michigan State transfer. He's got 65 points on 30 field goal attempts.
And now, did he redshirt last year, or did he? Is he one of these guys that didn't play enough minutes and then ended up being able to play right away?
No, he was a transfer, so I don't think you call it a redshirt. I think he was at Michigan State 2 years ago, then he decided to transfer, so he just sat out a year.
I thought that was considered a redshirt year.
Is it? But I don't think that's actually a redshirt.
So what is Reuter doing right now? So that's just a transfer? It's just called like a transition year?
Yeah, is it? I don't know.
I don't know either. This
I don't know. I feel like
Welcome
to By George. We don't really know.
Yeah. But either way, the guy sat out last year is what I was asking.
He sat out last year, yeah. But either way, 65 points on 30 field goal attempts is just it's crazy efficient, and that's through 4 games, so it's not, you know, he's not going to stay there all season, but it's not necessarily a sort of fluky pace either.
Right.
Jordan Goodwin was their prized recruit. He's the best recruit to come into the A-10 this season. So for as efficient as Javon Best has been scoring, Jordan Goodwin has been as inefficient. Jordan Goodwin's got something. He's taking more shots per game than points he's averaging, which is just terrible. Like, you never want to be there. But he's also putting up 5 assists per game, 7 rebounds, 3 steals, and a block.
So it's a matter of just his shots falling.
So, I mean, he's going to be a freaking nightmare when his shot starts falling, man, because a guy who can already fill up the box score like that, those guys don't come around very often. In the preseason, I said that I wasn't really sold on St. Louis's coaching. I said their talent was legitimate, but I'm not sold on their coaching. I'm kind of still there. You know, they won a big game against Virginia Tech. They got walloped by Providence.
I heard from that game, from the Tech game, was that Tech missed like 12 free throws, didn't really look that good, made a lot of mental mistakes down the stretch, kind of like played down to their opponent. But maybe I'm wrong.
I mean, I think Tech's still a good team, and I think that
they could be a top 25 team all said and done.
You know, I think Tech's a tournament team at the end of the day, and I don't want to diminish that win just because it was a team like St. Louis. But I think that's the team, kind of team that St. Louis is going to be this year. They're going to pull off some really good wins, some wins that you might not expect, but they're going to be inconsistent enough for some head scratchers. I think that's partially a function of, you know, I'm not sold on their coaching staff. And also, they've got a lot of guys who've never played together before, between the transfers and between the talented freshmen that they're bringing in.
I believe we only played them once this year, and I sure hope it's a W for Mason.
Right.
Number five
is St. Joe's. St. Joe's is one of those teams that's just really, you know, it's really hard to know what to make of them when you're looking at them right now. They had a really bad-looking loss to Toledo to start the year. Toledo was selected to finish third in the MAC West in the preseason. I didn't even know the MAC had 2 divisions, but apparently there's an East and a West, and Toledo was third in one of them. After Toledo played St. Joe's, they won an exhibition against the D2 school by 10 points. Ooh. So,
wow.
Yeah. And then Lamar Kimball's out for the season, which hurts. But they've got this guy.
So why do you have him so high?
They've got this guy, Taylor Funk. He's 6'9". He's 225. He's come out of absolutely nowhere. I didn't even know who he was preseason. He's averaging 20 points per game through the first three, and he's shooting 59% for three.
Wow.
Shavar Newkirk's really good. He's had a solid start to the season. He's not lighting teams on fire like he did to start last year. But I think that when you're looking at a guy who comes off an ACL tear like Shavar Newkirk does, it's probably reasonable to expect him to get better as the season goes along and, you know, as he gets reacclimated to the game. And also Charlie Brown hasn't been playing for him. He comes back in a few weeks. So I think they've still got a good core of size and shooting when Charlie Brown comes back, and I think they've got some good lineup flexibility. They'll be able to go big. They'll be able to go small. Phil Martelli's the kind of coach who's gonna know how to utilize that, and he's going to help the team reach its potential.
Number four.
So I got some bad news. I've watched a couple of VCU games, and I think they're good again. I had them at number six to start the season. I think that was underselling them a little bit. They've got a lot of offensive firepower. They're not going to have any trouble scoring points, but they're not playing defense very well. I've watched a couple of their games. One was against North Florida. There was a point at the game where North Florida was 16 of 29 from three against them.
Is that the game where Tillman had like 27 and just balled out of control?
I think so, yeah, because North Florida has a pretty horrible defensive rating as well. But, yeah, North Florida was 16 for 29 from three, and I was watching most of that game, and it was one of those stats where it didn't feel like an accident. You know, obviously teams aren't going to shoot better than 50% from three against you over any, you know, extended period of time. But North Florida, they hit one of their last 11, so they finished 17 of 40 from three, which is still good. But, you know, VCU's got it. They've got a real problem giving up the three ball. Opponents are shooting 38% against them from three so far. That doesn't include the Marquette game that they played and lost today. Marquette was 13 for 36, so I don't think that percentage changes a whole lot. And also, one interesting thing about VCU, they're only turning over their opponent on 13.3% of possessions. That's really, really low for a pressing team. Generally,
Have they been pressing?
Oh, yeah, they've been pressing. Generally, teams that press turn the other team over around 18% at a minimum. So having them around 13.3% was really, really bad. I will say that...
Haven't they lost back-to-back games?
They lost...
I believe they lost today.
They lost to Marquette today.
And I believe they lost to UVA the game before that?
And they lost to UVA the game before that, yep.
Okay,
you're
right. So you're just going by the eye test, but you think they're good? Because
but they were in both of those games,
they,
you know.
Were I think they? Because I didn't get a chance to watch that UVA game, but I thought they got beat up.
I didn't watch the UVA game, but I think they were within striking distance most of the game. Same thing with Marquette. They were trailing, but they were within striking distance.
And fourth in the A-10 is like, yeah, you're top four, but it still may not be like that good of a team.
Yeah.
Necessarily.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, I think that the defensive lapses that we've seen are the kind that can be closed up by good coaching. So I think
we'll find out.
We'll see. You know, I think when you press a lot like that, you'll give up some open looks.
Yeah.
Whether or not Mike Rhodes is able to close them up,
we'll see if they can ride the road.
We'll see, but I don't think it's the sort of it doesn't feel like a hopeless situation necessarily.
Number three
is St. Bonaventure. St. Bonaventure lost to Niagara in the season opener. Then they beat Jacksonville State. I had them number two preseason. It's tough to knock them down too much because they've been playing without Jalen Adams.
They've been playing without lights, right? Didn't their lights go out and they had to miss a game?
Yeah, so they didn't actually play without the lights, but they had to wait for the lights to come back on.
And they never came back on, and they've since had to suspend that game, and they're looking for
I think they're playing it right now, actually. Oh, I think they played it today.
Oh, really?
I think the Bonnies beat the crap out of UMES, which is the team they were playing.
Got it.
But yeah. You're right. They got no lights. They got no starting point guard. Their pets' heads are falling off.
I read the Bonnie blog, their Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
Complete meltdown city so far.
Yeah, that was an interesting night on Twitter. But, yeah, I think the concern there is after the loss to Niagara, you're just kind of concerned, like, are they just the two-man show again? Because last year they were Matt Mobley, they were Jalen Adams, and they were not a whole lot else, and that was... You know, that was good enough to be pretty good, but it wasn't enough to get them into a team that was ever really threatening, you know, threatening for the A-10, either regular season title or conference title or even for a tournament bid, you know. And I think in the...
And they did feel like snubs last year.
I don't know if I felt like they were snubbed. I mean, I think they made the A-10 semifinal, I think.
Right.
In the A-10 tournament, but... You
may have not felt that way, but they did.
Did they?
Yeah. Looking back to last year, it was all about like the Bonnies not making it.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they had that goofy loss to VCU and Matt Mobley hit that shot but then their student section got a technical or something weird happened where...
Shocker.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so I didn't mean... Let's get back to the stats.
Sorry. Matt Mobley went nuts in their loss to Niagara, and the problem was that You know, nobody else really stepped up, and that's kind of the worst case scenario if you're a Bonnies fan, right? Because you know Matt Mobley is good, you know Jalen Adams is good, and in order for the team to actually, you know, threaten to win the conference or threaten to get an at-large bid, you need somebody else to step up, and that didn't happen in that game. I think I'm still kind of concerned about their front court play. Josh Ayeni is a really good jump shooter. He's a big guy. I think he's around 6'9", 200 something. But he doesn't really bang inside. He's got 13 rebounds this year. Only 7 of them are offensive. He doesn't block shots. Matt Mobley's been fantastic again. I think 56 points, 14 rebounds, 9 assists through their first 2 games. And, you know, if you're the Bonnies, you need somebody else to step up and sort of take the scoring load off of Matt Mobley or Jalen Adams. I'm really hoping that the Bonnies have Jalen Adams against Maryland on Friday so we can figure out who they actually are and how good they can actually be.
Number two.
I've got Rhode Island, number two. Rhode Island struggled on the road against the tough Nevada team. EC Matthews hurt his wrist in that game, which obviously hurts Rhode Island. He's their best player. It's the sort of thing that might be a blessing in disguise. Danny Hurley had a quote that I liked where he said it'll basically be like a free agent acquisition when they get him back, and it's tough to argue with, because if any team is built to be able to withstand an injury to a great guard slash forward like that, it's Rhode Island. Stan Robinson has 13 steals through his first 3 games. Rhode Island's turning over the opponent on over 25% of their possessions. That's 9th in the NCAA as of the time that we're talking about this. So last year, their defensive identity was they had that front court that blocked everything, right? Between Hassan Martin and Karan Iverson, Rhode Island's team block rate was one of the best in the country.
I mean, they were also jacked. They were like grown men at 20 years old.
Yes, they were. And it feels like their new defensive identity, instead of blocking shots, they're going to force a lot of turnovers. So Andre Berry's emerged as a front court player for them. Cyril Langevin got injured. So, you know, they've been running a lot of four guard, but then even their four guard lineup is big. I think their four guard lineup goes like 6 foot, 6'2", 6'4", 6'4", you know, something that's not very small. And when Matthews and Langevin then come back, they're going to have a lot of flexibility to go big and to go small. So I think, you know, Rhode Island's going to be, a good team all season long.
Yeah, I watched EC Matthews play. He actually played at Kenner. And was on, I think, AJ's team, someone that I got to see a lot of him. The guy can all-out score. Now, is he a point guard? Is he a shooting guard? Do they have, like, a couple guards that bring the ball up?
Yeah, he's kind of a combo guard. I think it's mostly, Jared Terrell and, forgetting his first name right now, but the other guard, Garrett, I think they sort of split point guard duties. Haven't seen a whole lot of Rhode Island so far this year. But my impression is that EC Matthews is a little bit more off ball, a little bit more of a creator on the wing.
And your king of the A-10.
King of the A-10 at the moment is Davidson. Davidson has been absolutely unreal to start the season. They've got 150.3 offensive rating, which is just impossible, I think. If you look at the best offensive rating from each of the past 10 years or so, you generally don't get a whole lot higher than 120. So that's, like, they're just absolutely throwing flames right now. They've got 52 assists, only 7 turnovers. On defense, they've allowed 26 assists, and they've forced 26 turnovers. And then, you know, Peyton Aldridge is going nuts. John Axel Gunmanson has 43 points on 17 shots. I know that they've only played 2 games. I know that they haven't really played anyone yet. But this isn't really a we need to wait to see if they're good kind of situation. Like,
you really don't think so.
You don't do that 2 games in a row unless you're legitimately very, very good.
Because you have them now moving from 4th to 1st.
I'm moving from 3rd to 1st. I was one of the highest on them in the A-10 in the preseason, and I'm feeling vindicated right now and feeling, you know, quite frankly, a little bit silly for not having them even higher, because I was high on this team coming into the season, and the way that they've been running, McKillick's sort of fever dream of an offense is just been unreal. They play Nevada tomorrow. I think that'll show us a lot about how well they can actually compete. if I had to make a prediction, I would say that Davidson, you know, I would predict Davidson to win. They also play UNC on December 1st, so they're gonna test themselves a little bit in the out-of-conference, and they're going to let us know, you know, how good they actually are. But my opinion right now, as of this moment, is that, you know, you don't do what they did in the first two games without legitimately being a very, very good offensive team.
So Davidson is the week two king of the A-10, or king of the North.
Right.
Did you watch Game of Thrones?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
So if you're a listener, you know, another blogger, you know, you cover Davidson or you cover GW or whatever, and you want to come on the show, maybe you don't think that Petey Buckets is giving your team...
Who's Petey Duckets?
Yeah. Petey Buckets, I would like to hear you debate him. Come on our show. We would love to have you. I can Skype you in, no issues. If you disagree or you just want to hop on by, George, shoot us a message through Twitter. Our Twitter, again, is @ByGeorgeGMU. Pete, do you have any lasting thoughts for your millions of fans out there?
I think it'll be a fun season for Mason, man. I think the important thing is to keep expectations in check. You know, I'm bought in at this point to the line that it's a 2-year evaluation period basically for this season. I'm really looking forward to watching what AJ Wilson and Mar can do on the floor together. I think the offensive spacing is going to be tremendous. I think that we're going to probably be a little bit better offensively in terms of rating and efficiency than we were last year. Just because everybody, you know, aside from when Calixt is on the floor, everybody else is going to have to be defended out to the three-point line. And that creates an entirely different sort of pressure that defenses have a lot of trouble adjusting to.
So even though PD can break down every single team in the A-10, you always know where his heart resides. Guys, thanks for listening to By George. Tune in next time. This episode is brought to you by Velaccio. What is Velaccio? It's a watch company. One of my former players bought a watch company, is now pushing it all over Northern Virginia, nationwide. Where can you find them? Velaccio.com. That's VALACHIO.com. Again, that's one of my former players. He's 19 years old, goes to UVA, bought a watch company, and it looks sharp. My favorite part is the hands of the watch are a different color. Sometimes it matches the band, but most of the time it just pops off the face. Again, that's Velaccio.com.